WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A June 1st deadline for default looms over debt negotiations in Washington, but as CBS's Christopher Cruz reports...
After earlier in the day telling reporters that there was a pause in the talks, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says they're back on again. A White House official tells CBS News the talks will continue tonight. We're less than 2 weeks until the government could run out of money to pay its bills, something that's never happened.
Football great, actor, and civil rights activist Jim Brown has died at the age of 87. Brown appeared in more than 30 films, including The Dirty Dozen and 100 Rifles.
Well, I guess I took a job that nobody else wanted. And even at that, it took me a whole year to get it.
A spokesperson for Brown's family says that he passed away peacefully in his sleep last night at his L.A. home with his wife by his side. A visit from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is expected at the G7 meeting in Japan. Details from CBS's Elizabeth Palmer in Hiroshima.
The Ukrainian president will be the summit's special guest, due to arrive here this weekend. Zelensky spent the day at the Arab summit in Saudi Arabia looking for support from some leaders with close ties to Moscow. He welcomed the announcement from President Biden that the U.S. would back the plan to train Ukrainian pilots on U.S.-made F-16s. This, he wrote, will greatly enhance our army in the sky.
South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott has filed paperwork with the Federal Election Committee, allowing him to enter the 2024 presidential race. University of Virginia political analyst Larry Sabato.
He tries to be a uniter rather than a divider within the Republican Party. I don't think he would get much support among Democrats or liberal independents.
Scott's formal announcement is expected Monday. 15 construction workers were rescued from a huge fire in Charlotte, North Carolina yesterday, but Fire Chief Reginald Johnson says they found two bodies inside the structure.
It actually started in a spray insulation foam trailer. It was located on the ground floor. Still accidental.
A day after Disney Corporation canceled a billion-dollar project for Florida, GOP Governor Ron DeSantis is acting like it's not a big deal.
Ron DeSantis was in New Hampshire, not Florida, when he said he wouldn't put Disney on a pedestal.
So they can do whatever they want. I know people try to chirp and say this or that. The chance of us backing down from that is zero.
Disney cited changing business conditions as a reason for canceling the big project without mentioning the ongoing feud with DeSantis. That all started last year when the company criticized new laws it considers discriminatory toward the LGBTQ community. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Four of Wisconsin's five major power companies are asking regulators to let them raise rates next year. For Alliant Energy customers, for one, the hikes would add about $13 a month to the average light bill and a little more than $5 a month to the average gas bill. Progress on more state aid to local communities appears to be stalled. Republicans in the Assembly and Senate can't agree if Milwaukee and Milwaukee County should have to hold referendums to raise local sales taxes.
That would not fix the problems in Milwaukee because I think a referendum vote would fail. So I think the way to do it is through a vote by the Common Council and the county board.
That's Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue. But Speaker Robin Voss says the bill is dead in the Assembly without a referendum requirement. In sports, the Brewers are at Tampa Bay tonight. Adrian Hauser starts for Milwaukee. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Zogalo Food Truck Park is so much fun. They have such variety in one place. You name it. Ice cream, bagels, sushi, tacos, pizza, to tasty sandwiches, and a fun full bar to boot with some craft cocktails and beers. You can even host a private party or reserve a heated hut. Support local food entrepreneurs with family and friends and taste Milwaukee. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Find us at ZogaloMKE.com. That's ZogaloMKE.com.
Harvey High is now in session. Today's subjects, biology.
Name an animal with a long neck.
Dinosaur, long neck, yeah.
Let me ask you something. When last time you seen one?
Anatomy.
Name a part of Steve Harvey that a woman might want to kiss.
Your six-pack.
The six-pack? Does she know who Steve Harvey is? You got to dig for it, but it's in there.
Get schooled with Family Feud.
Weeknights at 6 and 6:30 on CW 18.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
dealing with the trans issue that they don't know how to do. But you know what? Government didn't either. And this is where I'm concerned about where we're heading. You know, I grew up in an era where, you know, government didn't get involved in a lot of these things. This issue with Ken Paxton going after this hospital and going after these trans kids, you know what they're setting up? You know what they're normalizing? They're going to go get those kids. We got to go protect them. You know, we're going to go get them and we're going to protect them. So what that's going to mean is the state is going to get in the habit of going and taking kids from their parents. Do you remember a bunch of years ago, my conservative friends, when there was a movement of liberals saying, hey, you know, maybe we need to go and take kids away from abusive situations, and how crazy you went? This is the same kind of thing to me. And I stood with you. I don't think that, you know, kids should be taken away from their parents without real serious consequences. But this is another one of those things. That the hypocrisy. Oh, the hypocrisy. It's infuriating. And you ask yourself, when does it end? How does it end? It only ends when we say enough is enough. You know, my grandfather always said, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. It's time for us to start worrying about ourselves. Take a look in the mirror. Like I said, I don't know all the answers. But what this is happening, it's wrong. Now remember, our Republican friends are the ones, they have family values and, you know, that kind of stuff. Where is that here? They care about the children. Hear that a lot. Which is interesting because now I'm looking at the debt ceiling fight. And I'm looking at the cuts that they're proposing. And you know who gets hit the hardest? You can say it. It's the children. You know that. For instance, it's almost bipartisan that they're going to claw back a lot of the money that was not spent out of the, I guess, six bills dealing with COVID. One of the areas that people are sounding the alarm on is through different states and different localities are trying to rebuild their public health departments and dealing with, a rise in sexually transmitted diseases. And evidently, it's like, wow, how is it possible that we have more cases than they had back in the 1950s? We are now spiking. There's been a 32% increase in 2021 in sexual transmitted diseases, according to the CDC. And, you know, the children, evidently congenital syphilis cases. That's when the parents give it to the fetus. That has surged more than 200% over the last 5 years. And we've had the most fatalities since the early 1990s. But I know they love the children, just don't want to pay for them. We want children to be born. We just don't want them to get, you know, education or health care or fed. It's angering. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm in this moment where I'm looking at this just this ridiculous case and this poor family. And the one thing that I didn't mention is the fact that it's going to cost them thousands and thousands of dollars because the health insurance they had doesn't cover all the bills. So can you imagine being forced to have to go through the trauma of having to go through the whole birthing process, the 99 minutes of life and watching this child suffer and struggle and gasp for its last breath, and then being slapped with having to pay the massive bills because your insurance coverage doesn't cover all of it. You know, I've watched as loved ones have taken their last breath. I can't imagine having to sit and watch a child go through that. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
I'm okay. I got two stories to share with you, and they're true. The first one sort of ties into the story you were talking about. Roe versus Wade was passed the year that I turned 13, and just before it was passed, there was a story in a Reader's Digest, and it was a true story, because back in those days that they would put true stories in there. This family in New York, and I remember it was New York, the pregnancy was having issues, high risk. The baby was born early, and it was deformed and everything else. And they said, it's probably not going to live that long. So they took, and the parents were like, well, you know, let's just make it comfortable and let it pass away. And that story just stuck with me. And then Roe versus Wade was passed, and my mother was having a fit. And I can remember taking that story and telling my mother, and if Roe versus Wade had been passed, this family could have aborted this pregnancy and not went through that, because I remember it was just a very traumatic event. They were an older couple, and the pregnancy ended up, she wasn't able to get pregnant again. So they went through that entire thing. Uh-huh. And the second story, and it is a true story. When I was in college, I met a girl, and her name was Sally. And Sally and I kept in touch over the years. And about 20 years ago, Sally found out that the reason why she had never had any children was because she was actually intersexed, which meant when she was born, she had the outward sexual organs of a female, but she had no ovaries. She had testes. And she ended up having trans surgery, and Sally became Sal. And I just received word that she died a year ago. I don't think she would mind me sharing the story of how she became Sal. And we had kept in touch, and he totally enjoyed his new life as Sal. So I hate to hear that a chance for people to be their true authentic self is being denied.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where Mind your own business. What? Here's my problem in all of this. It doesn't do anything to me to allow people to be who they are or what they are. It's insane to me that you would want to interject yourself and to demand other people to do. I don't know. I guess I'm struggling with that.
It is, but you have a good evening.
Thanks,
Rick.
Alice. No, I mean, look, get ready for these kind of stories. As Alice points out, I remember, you know, granted, I was younger at the point. I remember my mother telling a story of a friend of hers who had gone to Kentucky to get a backroom abortion and ended up killing her because of the infection. Because if you'd have gone, I guess how the story goes, if you'd have gone to the hospital, they would have figured it out and it would have been a whole legal process, which is where we're heading, by the way. We're heading backwards. And look, I am not the greatest champion of abortion rights. I'm personally not in favor of it. I've always been in the pro-safety camp. The idea that I don't want my kids, I don't want my daughters to be given that choice that their grandmother had to have or their grandmother's friends had to live with. We're a better society than that. For me, if you want to stop abortion, the end of a gun is not the way you do it. You do it through education and prevention. You do it through wanting people to, having people want to bring children to the world. And that means good jobs. That means health care. That means education. That means making sure that we don't have homeless children. That means a lot of policy stuff that we're, well, as we're fighting this debt ceiling fight, we're literally going after taking food out of the mouths of children. That's the goal here. The goal here is to tear apart the social safety net even more. You know, I was looking at the New York Times had a bit on how Republicans want to cut the deficit and be balanced budget within 10 years and what it would take to do. And the Republican Study Committee, their package was cut Social Security by 4%, cut Medicare by 24%, cut Medicaid by 49%. Remember, the children, half of the children in this country are born with Medicaid. You're going to cut half of the Medicaid funding, which means those mothers aren't going to get prenatal care. They want to cut food assistance, farm programs, military retirement, anti-poverty programs by 60%. All other programs, all other spending, veterans, health, transportation, education, law enforcement, research, all that stuff, 49% cut they want. Defense gets a 1% gain. That they're okay with. At no point are they talking about raising taxes. At no point are they talking about making things. Nope, not going to do it. And yet here we are in this moment where you just go, when do we say enough? When do we fight for better opportunity? I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's angering. It's frustrating. And there's not much you can do other than vote. Because we're going to end up just reliving the sins of the past. And that's the frustrating part I have of this. Because here again, you know, you look at what's going on. The debt ceiling talks have stalled, and now everyone's saying, hey, we got to cut. We need to slash and burn. And yet nobody's talking about raising taxes or raising revenue in any way, shape, or form. We're going to literally take food out of the mouths of children, make more people homeless, take health care away from more people so that the very wealthy in this country can do very well. Doesn't that tick you off? Quick break, right back.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1950. That was the day 31 dock workers were killed and hundreds more were injured in an explosion at the Raritan River Port in South Amboy, New Jersey. Workers were loading ammunition from freight trains onto ships. The freight's ultimate destination was Pakistan. Practically every structure in South Amboy suffered some form of serious or structural damage, with windows blown out everywhere and debris reported as far as 25 miles away. 5,800 more unexploded anti-personnel mines had been strewn about the port. Demolition experts had to be called in for removal. A subsequent fire at a nearby agricultural phosphorus plant complicated their work. The blast was caused by the detonation of 150 tons of military explosives and gelatin dynamite. The piers, equipment, and railroad cars were all demolished. Over a dozen nearby barges were either on fire or sank. Emergency operations went into effect and a state of emergency was declared. Key industries in the immediate area were seriously damaged, including the International Smelting and Refining Company, Pennsylvania Railroad Maintenance Shops, and the power plant for New Jersey Power and Light. According to a report by the National Board of Fire Underwriters and the Fire Insurance Rating Organization of New Jersey, packing of the mines and fuses by the Kilgore Company was not in accordance with Army standards, and labeling was confusing. The shipped mines were labeled as M1A1, though all parts but the detonator were identical to M1 mines, discontinued by the Army in 1942 for their apparent defective fuse, leading to accidental firing and explosions. The report refrained from drawing a certain cause or assigning blame. Instead, the underwriters offered a number of possible scenarios and recommendations for best practices to be implemented. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
There's a common political refrain among Texas progressives: thank God for Mississippi. Our own state government, run by corporate lobbyists and right-wing nutballs, is a notorious hellhole for efforts to provide even a little more fairness for the poor, the working class, and the environment. So, Lone Star progressives need some straw to grasp to keep from tumbling into the ditch of total despair. Mississippi has been that straw. No matter how mingy our state officials are, Texans can count on the Magnolia State to be one digit worse. But have mercy! Texans are suddenly in danger of losing our reputational buffer, for Mississippi is close to making a momentous upgrade this election year. An unabashed working-class Democrat with a program of For the People reforms and an anti-plutocrat campaign for governor has already pulled even with a right-wing incumbent. Brandon Presley is the upstart's name. A little-D Democratic populist elected at 23 years old to be mayor of his small hometown where he still lives, he's now in his fourth term as a highly effective, widely popular member of the State Utility Commission. There, he has successfully battled the electric power giants and telecom profiteers on behalf of everyday ratepayers, workers, and the environment. Presley, who actually is an Elvis cousin, is not a pure liberal. He's pro-gun and anti-choice. But this is Mississippi, and while it's essential to strive for the pure light of liberalism, a multiracial majority of workaday Mississippians see Presley as a pure champion of basics they've long been denied, from health care to voting rights. So they're rallying for change. After all, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked. This is Jim Hightower saying, the people of Mississippi know they're being kicked by the moneyed powers. And Brandon Presley is saying, let's kick back. To learn more, go to brandonpresley.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, they say, may you live in interesting times. These are most certainly interesting times, as we've got a Republican Party and a Supreme Court hell-bent on repealing the 20th century. And look, we've got to fight this stuff. There is no easy way to say it. We got to fight this stuff. Let's quick go to the phones. I got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are we doing?
Yes, I wanted to make a couple of points. And this is really, it's just a cycle that we keep going through in our society. But, you know, for beginning in the late 19th, early 20th century, you had the progressive movement, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and the Trust Busters, and the real first attempts to try and create some sort of societal safety nets and things to take care of the less fortunate, and recognize that you've got to limit the power of the people at the top, the super rich, and that there is such a thing as too much wealth concentrated at the top, and you need to protect the people who actually help to generate that. And then, slowly but surely, you know, what happened? The progress that you made, those people don't just sit still that lost that power and lost some of what they perceive to be their entitled wealth. No, they make sure that they try and elect the right people so they can crawl back all of that legislation, all of those policies that represent progress for a lot of us. And then that's what you get until you get somebody like a Hoover again, and then, you know, what you get a crash in the economy, and you get an FDR, and then again we start to build once again. And you get a lot of great things that come out of that, and people like to vilify liberals in this country. The right hates liberals. But I hate to tell you this, but you know what? If it weren't for liberals, the people with the pitchforks and the torches would have come for you. It's liberals that said, you know what, you can either have reforms or you can make your argument to these people who want to kill you. Because, you know, in the 1930s, there was a real movement in this country, not just in this country, but in Western Europe, other places, for actual socialism. I'm not talking about the high tax rates of the 1950s, the 50% plus, or rather 90%, 90, 91% top marginal tax rates. I'm talking about somebody coming in and saying, GM, you are now owned by the people of this country. That's what the true left wanted. Liberals were the ones who said, okay, the compromise is, you know, strong unions, strong social welfare programs, strong social safety nets, all of these things, and access to the middle class for people who didn't have it before. And you people who are wealthy, you get to keep a little bit less, but you still get to have a lot more than the rest of us.
You still get to be wealthy.
But again, you still get to be wealthy, but they are never happy with that. Instead, it's, okay, we gave them that, we averted the revolution, now it's time to start crawling back, getting back. Lower that tax rate incrementally every few years, every decade. Move away from the state that regulates the kind of behavior, so we can poison the air, the land, the water. We can poison people. And heck, if somebody figures out we're doing it, we'll just have to pay out some money, but we'll make more money than what we end up paying out. I mean, all of these things, because as so many have pointed out, you know, politics is not a spectator sport. You don't just turn out for one or two elections. You've got to keep turning out. Local, state, federal elections. You've got to be aware of what's going on in the judiciary. They are not stopping. They can afford to hire people. They can take time out and not have to worry about it because they pay lobbyists to do their thinking for them.
No, good
but
stuff,
for
Steve.
Us, no, you don't have that luxury. You've got to stay on top of the game.
No, I'm right there with you. Good stuff, Steve. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. No, look, at the end of the day, he's right. I thought 2008, when the collapse happened there, I thought the organizing would happen. I thought the pitchforks would come out, and we're not there yet. And look, we've given them all this money, this wealth, this power, and how have they used it? To abuse us. And look, I look at what's happening in Texas. On Saturday in Texas, they're about to move three major election bills that are basically going to give the governor the ability to, well, seize elections. And only in those that Democratic place of Harris County, the biggest and the bluest part of the state, because, hey, can't trust those blueies. And that's why I've asked Rafael Lemaitre to come talk with us. Rafael is the communications director over at the New Economy for Working Houston. NewEconomyHOU.com is the website. Rafael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So, you know, as Steve pointed out, look, you know, the moneyed interests have grown so powerful. We've given them so much. They've clawed back so much of the New Deal. And now it's going even further. These election bills are a massive overreach that I think 10 years ago there would have been a revolution over. But yet here we are. It looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of like the frog in boiling water. It's kind of happening slowly, and there's so many bad bills that we're seeing go through the Texas legislature right now, from anti-trans bills to pro-gun bills after Uvalde to taking over local ordinances, you name it, that it's almost like, you know, you've got this other group of laws that are really, really bad as well. But you nailed the nail on the head there when you mentioned Harris County in Houston. And, you know, a lot of folks, you know, before I moved to Texas, I just thought of Texas as a bright red state. But it's a little more complicated than that. Harris County is the largest county in Texas. We have more people in the county of Harris County than in the population of 27 states. We'd be the 27th largest. If we were a state, we'd be the 27th largest state in the country. So it's no coincidence that we're being targeted here, because blue, it was purple or even, and it's no coincidence that now that, you know, we're seeing the county grow and diversify and businesses move here, and the politics go head to head with Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Patrick and the Attorney General Ken Paxton, that now all of a sudden they're not so interested in letting us have, you know, all these local freedoms that they've been so eager to talk about for so many years.
So walk me through these three pieces of legislation that are going to move, I guess, on Saturday, the 20th, SB 1070, SB 1750, and SB 1933. One, it looks like, I guess we're going to institute cross-check. So if your name sounds like somebody else that lives in another state, they're going to purge you. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, and I think the easy way to think about this is, you know, when the pandemic started, there were a few there were major improvements made in how we run elections in Harris County. We instituted a few things that were like incredibly good for workers. For instance, we had 24-hour voting at a couple of our locations, you know, for nurses and doctors and other workers who don't work regular hours, so that they can have a chance to vote. So that concerned about COVID could literally vote from their cars. We instituted countywide voting so that you could go and vote from, you know, at any location, not just your own precinct location. And that's really what triggered a lot of the Republicans 2 years ago at the previous session. What they did is that they went in and they literally made all of those things illegal, even though they were all successful. They made voting easier without making it less secure. The bills you're talking about now are essentially the 2.0 version of that. They saw in November of 2022 that Democrats again won Harris County, even though it was, you know, supposed to be a tough year for Democrats. And what they've done is they've gone and they've capitalized on common mistakes that happen when you run elections in these huge counties, and use those as a guise to basically take over our elections. So, yeah, you have SB 1933, for example. And again, I encourage, you know, your listeners not to focus on a specific bill, because it's changing and they try to amend stuff all the time. But the basic premise here is that they want to use any common mistake that happens to allow Governor Abbott and his political appointees to either call for a new election or overturn the results of the election or put in administrative oversight of our elections. Which is, you know, as undemocratic as it gets. And, you know, there's a lot of people here that have been fighting these bills for a long time. Tomorrow's going to be a big day because, as you mentioned, these bills are looking like they're going to move forward tomorrow in some form or fashion. So we're very concerned, and we're asking folks to line up and speak out against these as much as they can.
What's interesting to me is that they chose Harris County. I mean, look, if you're you know, a free speech advocate, if you're a good government advocate, if you're you know, a good voting advocate, you wouldn't it be the whole state? Why choose? I mean, this is like showing your hand. Why choose one part of the state and go, well, the rest of it, if these things happen, we don't care. But this one place, we care.
It's wild. In the legislation, they'll say that this only applies to counties over 3.4 million people. Well, there's only one county that's over 3.4 million people, and it's Harris County. Look, they're reading the writing on the wall. 1 in 7 registered voters in the state of Texas lives in Harris County. And Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is on record as saying that we cannot let Texas turn blue, because if Texas turns blue, then the cause is lost for the Republican Party in many ways. Yep. Because they can't lose Texas. So as much as they try to make the arguments about, oh, this is about election integrity, or, you know, they had problems with some paper shortages in a few locations during the November 22 election, and we're just trying to fix that. It's clearly a targeted harassment campaign intended not just to overturn and undermine our elections, but to punish people who live here and to punish the public servants who work day and night, year round, to run elections in this county. There's another bill that is targeting. We have an elections administrator for the largest counties in Texas have this position. It's an appointed position where you actually have a full-time person whose job it is to modernize, secure, and make voting convenient and safe and all of these kinds of things. Harris County established this position for the first time 2 or 3 years ago, and now they want to remove that position entirely from Harris County. Not the other counties that have them in Texas, both rural and urban, but just Harris County. So it's really just a way to punish the folks here. And I think that I think people are waking up. I think people are starting to see that this is not the way democracy is supposed to work. And it's really short-sighted, by the way, because if you look at the demographics of Harris County, if you look at where our economy is actually growing, it's right here in Harris County. We are driving the job growth in Texas. You know, just today, Governor Abbott tweeted, you know, Texas is, you know, growing and all these jobs are growing and we're a great pro-business state. Well, look at where the businesses are going and look at where the workers are.
Yeah.
It's Harris County. So, we're going to keep fighting, but the bills are very troublesome, and we hope and we wish it would get a little bit more national attention because it's very troubling.
No, this is huge for me. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Raphael Lemaitre. He's the communications director for New Economy for Working Houston. NewEconomyHOU.com is their website. If you want to take a look at this, this is important to me, Raphael, because if this is allowed to happen, if this is allowed to go through, this is going to normalize. The ability to go, we don't trust the ballot box. It's going to end that sanctity of the ballot box that we've had in this country for a couple hundred years. You know, we've always had some problems. There's always been issues. But this is going, we can appoint somebody to just throw it out if we don't like the results because we found some error somewhere. This is scary to me because if it's allowed to happen here, you know where they're going next. You know, they're going to other red states that have blue cities in it. And this is how this is going to work itself out.
Yeah. And that's the game they're playing. And if you look at these bills that are going through, they're very vaguely worded. And that's on purpose. It says that, you know, the governor could basically replace or appoint an oversight board for, quote, any good cause. And that really could mean anything to anybody. One of the things I want to stress to folks is that, you know, this conspiracy theory that, you know, there's millions of people voting illegally and our elections are being stolen and, you know, Democrats are trying to rig the system so that they win isn't just a national problem that, you know, Donald Trump and other conservatives have kind of fueled with the big lie. It's happening here at the local level in its own way. We have here a small group of active conservative operatives who every day are trying to undermine this. There's, for example, there's a very conservative activist named Dr. Stephen Hotze who put together and paid actually private investigators to go harass, you know, a poor repairman and follow him in his AC truck. This made national news because he thought he had in the back of his HVAC repair truck thousands of stolen or fraudulent ballots. And this guy, a vigilante, pulled him over at gunpoint in the middle of the road and almost hurt or killed the poor guy. And of course, he didn't have any ballots in the back of his truck. But these are the folks that are behind these laws, these proposed laws. These are the people who are funding these proposed laws. And it's really scary because you're right. You know, it's all about how do you build trust with voters to make sure that they know that they're operating within a system that's fair. Because once that trust is undermined, you know, who knows what can happen next.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this simply, and you can agree or disagree, that the Republican policies are not popular. People don't want what they have to offer. And the only way that they can win elections is by rigging the game and cheating before the game's even started. And you go back to 2000 with the hanging chads and all the voting while black in Florida and the purges that happened there. You go to the caging of 2004 where they were sending out stuff. And if you didn't return it, they kicked you off the voting rolls. You go to the voter ID stuff in 12, where they're trying to limit the number of people. It seems every cross-check with the Kobach folks do try on that stuff. It seems every election cycle, there's something new, and they have to go further and further and further to limit the number of people voting, to steal people's votes. And this is just the next in a long line of roadblocks that they've thrown up. I can't imagine what's next by saying, hey, we're just going to overturn what we don't like. That's insane to me. And it's insane that people would put up with it, even Republicans who would benefit from it. Because again, you know, you're not always going to be in charge.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, you look at easy things. Online voter registration, that should be a no-brainer in the year 2023. We do online banking. We do everything online securely. And yet you can't even in the state of Texas go and do online voter registration. You still have to go and look for a stamp and fill out the form and order the... That's intentional. That's intentionally putting a barrier in place of people who have busy lives. They have families. They work. It's just one more barrier they want to put in the place of people so that make it harder for those folks to vote and to hang on to power where they can. So it is very, very disappointing.
It's like the drop boxes, Raphael. I mean, there are places that you can only have one drop box per county. And you go, what? That makes no sense. The idea is that you put your ballot in, they scan the ballot, they know who the valid voters are. There's been no voter fraud whatsoever in these drop boxes. And yet, all the conspiracy, I see, look at that guy dropping hundreds of ballots. It's really kind of just crazy.
Yeah, and Ken Paxton, you know, there was another highly publicized case here in Houston where there was a man who voted. There was a polling location in Harris County that was open pretty late and had a very long line. And the last guy in line, he waited until 1 o'clock in the morning to vote. And he got a lot of publicity. And Ken Paxton went after him. It turns out he had some sort of felony prior arrest or something. He wasn't intentionally trying to, you know, defraud or vote illegally. He just had a record. He didn't know he wasn't allowed to vote. Ken Paxton turned him into an example. He literally put him in jail and put out a press release kind of punishing this guy for getting so much publicity about, you know, wanting to vote and stay in line for so long. And so they're going to keep trying to find these examples. And that's really one of the things that troubles me most about these bills that are moving through, is that they're criminalizing innocent mistakes that happen, you know, when you have millions of people in a county and you have so many people voting. There's a difference between, you know, somebody whose voter registration expired and showed up to vote and maybe had to fill out a provisional ballot, and somebody who is intentionally trying to vote for a dead person. And that second example isn't something you see very often, if at all. And so you're going to have election workers who are public servants. They don't get paid very much. The hours of work are really hard and crazy. And they're going to be discouraged from working because they're going to be scared of, you know, these elections marshals that are being created through these bills. They're going to be scared of being prosecuted over innocent mistakes. And that's not a society that's conducive to freedom and democracy and free speech and all of the things that we hold dear. It's just this culture of fear they want to instill around voting, and it's not American.
It's not just voting; it's everything we do. Again, the people who tell us they want smaller, less intrusive government are the ones who wield the power and beat us over the head with it every chance they get. So, last question I've got for you: you know, what do you want people doing? What's the marching order out of this? Because ultimately, if Paxton and company get what they want, if Abbott and company get what they want, this country, I don't know, it's not the country I grew up in.
Well, number one, and I probably don't have to tell your listeners and viewers this, is to actually vote, but not just in the big year elections and the off year elections. We have a mayoral race coming up in November here, and the low turnout elections, this is where people who aren't tuned in, this is where we lose seats for people who are defending democracy. If you're in Texas, we would love for, especially in Harris County, but, you know, even in these other urban counties, we want you to call these senators, these legislators who are in Austin right now at their legislative session, which only meets every 2 years. And urge them to stand up for democracy and to fight against these bills. We've really had enough of these preemption laws, these deliberate targeting of the people, the millions of people who live in this state. You know, we're just as Texan as the folks who live across the rural areas of this state. And so I want folks to help us out. They can go to neweconomyhou.com, learn more about our mission, and join our email list, and we'll be sending out alerts for these election bills, which are really bad, but also other ones that are in the mix as well.
Rafael, I appreciate you taking some time. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon as this continues, because these attacks, they're not going to end anytime soon or until we make it stop. But thanks so much, Rafael Lemaitre. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks. Appreciate it.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think about this? Do you see this as something that's going to happen in a state near you? Is it going to come to a neighborhood near you? I fear we normalize this, and the answer being, yeah, that's it. Quick break, right back, stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that black author and Marxist theorist C.L.R. James passed away. James was born in Trinidad, at the time a Caribbean colony that was part of the British Empire. His father was a school teacher. James became a leading intellectual on the subject of black liberation. His most famous work, The Black Jacobins, tells the story of the 1791 Haitian Revolution, when enslaved black Haitians successfully overthrew French colonial rule. James was a frequent contributor to Labor Action, a Marxist journal produced in New York from 1940 to 1958. He wrote about the struggles of black workers. He often penned fiery language. For example, in 1941, James wrote an article imploring black workers not to cross the picket line during a strike against the Ford Motor Company in Detroit. Ford had a reputation of hiring black workers at a time when many employers discriminated in their employment practices. But James warned his readers that the Ford Company was no friend to the worker and that the company was attempting to use race to keep its workforce divided. James wrote, quote, "Ford is one of the most dangerous enemies of labor who exist in this country. This enemy of society has been laying a train of race hatred in Detroit and is now about to touch it off. The organized working class movement and the Negroes will have to fight hard and long to check and frustrate and defeat this sinister plot. This will be no easy fight." In other articles, James also used his pen to call out labor unions for not including black workers and to call for the unification of black and white workers in their struggle. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Real quick, good on Minnesota. You got Minnesota Democrats who are passing a sweeping labor bill, going to give workers in Minnesota just all kinds of incredibly good stuff. You know, mandated paid sick time, banning non-compete agreements, funding for increased inspections in warehouses and in places in workplaces across the country or across the state, from nursing homes to meatpacking plants, to hospitals, to schools, to construction sites. More safety, more opportunities. I just, you know, this is the stuff Democrats have got to get their head around. Making lives better for working people, giving teachers the ability to bargain for class sizes, giving nurses and nursing home workers the ability to bargain over working conditions, and setting minimum wage and minimum standards across the state. It's time we start talking about using the tools that are in front of us to make people's lives better. And good on Minnesota, and good on the governor, who has said going to sign the bill once it gets to his desk. This is the kind of stuff that Democrats need to grab by the horns and move forward on. Because look, Republicans are making a play for the working class in rhetorical ways. The policies they're moving are horrible, but there's a lot of lip service. It's kind of like the Trump era Infrastructure Week. Had Infrastructure Week every week. Never did anything, but we got photo ops. We had a party, didn't actually get a new road. This is where Democrats need to really swing a big stick and say, look, we're actually doing the work of making lives better. Good on them.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.